With fair lending, there is no cure. There's only prevention. Because once you have a problem, the cost, reputational risk, all those things, I mean, you're not curing that. And so you've got to be able to prevent it. And I think in order to prevent it, they're going to have to be able to do things more quickly. I mean, you've got to be able to stay ahead, because if you don't have the information, you don't know, what to do.
And welcome to another episode of Banking Matters. I'm your host, Lindsay Hughley, and joining me today is Dr. Brandon Roberts. Dr. Roberts is the founder, president, and CEO of Premier Insights Incorporated, a boutique consulting and technology firm specializing in fair lending, advanced analytics, and regulatory risk management for financial institutions nationwide. With over 30 years of experience in the banking industry, Dr. Roberts has an extensive experience navigating regulatory inquiries and actions on behalf of banking clients related to fair lending and other matters involving regulatory agencies and the Department of Justice. With a relationship-oriented business model, the firm directly informs strategies for optimizing lending practices, mitigating fair lending risk, and navigating complex regulatory environments. Welcome, Dr. Roberts.
Hey, well, thank you so much. I appreciate you asking me, and I appreciate being here for sure.
Yes, I am super excited about our conversation. I know it's going to be so beneficial for our listeners. But first, here at Banking Matters, we do always like to hear how our guests got their start in working with financial institutions.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. Well, it's kind of a long story, so but I'll try to do the short version. So I was working with a company, and I had a background in data and statistics, and actually I started with this company in 91. This was in 1995, and the decennial census had just come out. There were a lot of exciting changes, like the advent of GIS technology and so forth. And so I've been tasked with building their data center. Well, we'd have people from the community come by and, get data and type of things. So we had a banker come by, and it turns out the bank had received a needs to improve CRA rating. So we were helping them and doing things. Well, in the course of that, he offered me a job, which I wasn't really interested in. But, the proverbial made me an offer I couldn't refuse. So I took the job and I took the job on a Wednesday, and it was announced on Friday the bank had been acquired. So what I didn't realize that was really my first consulting gig, because my job lasted about a year. And so in 95, I started this firm. And so here we are, 30 years, six kids later, still doing it. So.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So today we're really going to be diving into fair lending and kind of how that looks. But to start with, how would you describe the regulatory environment today in with respect to fair lending?
Well, I describe it as turbulent. We've come off of time of probably 15 years of very intense regulatory pressure from the agencies. And then the last 5 years, the CFPB, the DOJ jumped in and really amplified that pressure and really turned it into more regulation by enforcement. So now we have a new administration, and I think that part of the turbulence is there's a perception there have been a lot of changes, and there have been some changes in the regulations. The laws haven't changed, but what's happened is the regulatory priorities have definitely shifted. And so I think banks are not really sure exactly, I'm a pilot, I fly, and when you're in turbulent conditions, it's hard to do stuff, because hard to stay on course, hard to do your button pushing. And so I think it's made it, difficult for them. And I think for the regulators as well, you've had a lot of turnover. A lot of people have retired. A lot of people have been there a long time. I think they're conflicting priorities too. And so I think it's turbulent kind of for everybody. So that's how I would describe it today.
Absolutely. I know with the banks that I've worked with, they're kind of like in a froze state where we don't really know how to pivot because like you said, things are really not adding completely up. And so it's kind of a wait and see. And so with that in mind, how does that compare to the environment of the last decade?
Well, the last decade, you probably had at least a 15-year, maybe a 20-year run of pretty consistent, heavy pressure in terms of fair lending with the regulators. And in that time, at the beginning of that, probably, the 20-year time frame, you had a shift from just standard file by file, you know, side by side type file reviews to more of a data driven approach. The use of more sophisticated statistical techniques, those kind of things that really ramped up pressure for the larger banks in particular that had data. And so I think that's been pretty consistent. You know, we've had different administrations, but the pressure's been pretty consistent. But as I said, that last 5 years of the DOJ and the CFPB being involved, and it really turned into regulation by enforcement action. And I think with that subsiding, you know, I think that's a lot of, you know, it's kind of like you were saying, you know, the waves come in, now they're going out, and, you know, we're trying to figure out, everybody's trying to figure out exactly what to do and what's going on. So,
absolutely. And so considering all of that, just kind of, it is like a huge pendulum swing. And considering that, what are banks doing anything in response? Because like I said, what I've kind of experienced, it's kind of we're like nervous to make any changes because it has been such a heightened risk. And again, based off of all of the past enforcement actions, that's kind of what we've been like, basing our Fairlending program off of.
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, well said. I think everybody's been programmed, like you said, you know, in that direction. And I think you described it exactly right. I mean, we're seeing the same thing that you said, I mean, to the letter. So I wouldn't change any of that, you know, with what you said. So I haven't really seen a lot of change with those banks. I do think there's some anxiety. Now, on the other hand, I think they have felt a little bit of relief just from the regulators not being quite so intense. And I think they've appreciated that. But, you know, they haven't really changed a whole lot. And then, you know, you have the banks kind of in the middle. And I think a lot of them, probably most of them, are exactly what you described. They're really not sure, you know, they're kind of, I think most are more or less sort of maintaining the course, you know, trying to take advantage of things. If there is some relief for them, hey, we can devote, you know, less resources here or there. But that's, you know, that's basically it. I just think it's just so much uncertainty, which is worse sometimes, you know, because that's what risk is, right? And so when you amplify the uncertainty, I think it, you know, makes it difficult.
Absolutely. Because I mean, at this point, it is looking at things from both a regulatory lens, but also a legal lens too, especially when we're looking at fair lending. And so what approaches are you seeing the agencies and examiners taking in the current environment?
Sure. You know, as I said, there's been a lot of turnover. And so a lot of your older people that have been there a long time have gone. I think the mid-level management of most of the agencies is still in place, and then the field examiners. But once you get above that, a lot of those people have taken the retirement, or, you know, some of them have been, you know, I mean, just candidly, probably pressured to, you know, move on and so forth. And I think they are also getting a lot of conflicting priorities as well, you know, and just as an example, you know, the DOJ announced they weren't going to, you know, enforce or go after DEI related things and, you know, discrimination, but then they turned around and sued Uber for age discrimination or handicap, I think it was, discrimination, you know, under ADA. And so, okay, so, you know, it's just a lot of conflict. So I think that it's turbulent for them too, but their response has been to, it's pretty much business as usual. I think that they realize that if they, you know, unless they have a real smoking gun, they're probably not going to escalate that, you know, up. So I think that's probably a response and a change. But as far as what they look at, the same process, same procedures, the same way of going about it, I think that's pretty much the same. And we can talk about it in a minute. But, you know, you had the one change with the manuals with disparate impact versus disparate treatment. But again, I think in their minds, that doesn't really change anything. And, you know, like I say, we can talk about it later if you'd like. But so I just see it more business as usual, maybe with a little less intensity from their standpoint.
And Also, I know this isn't something that we had kind of planned on bringing up, but whenever you said the removal of the disparate impact and all of that, I have had a situation where an auditor was wanting that to be, was referencing the executive order and stating that that needed to come out of fair lending policy. Mm-hmm. What are your, do you have any thoughts on kind of how that approach looks? Yeah. Because again, it's regulatory versus legal still, and it's kind of just a balance of, again, who are we listening to?
Right.
What would be the next best move?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's one of the biggest areas of confusion. And I do think that, you know, you're right. And I've heard, you know, I've had bank execs tell me that, well, you know, are we going to get in trouble the opposite direction if we look at it and that kind of thing? So, you know, it's very confusing. So I think it'd be good if it's okay with you, we take a few minutes to kind of talk through kind of those two things. So to me, when I look at the changes that the regulators made, both the FDIC and the OCC in their manuals, and I think the Fed probably did as well. I just didn't, I don't remember seeing an announcement on that. But so what they did, fair, disparate treatment, disparate impact were always very, very intertwined. And because they were equally enforced, there was never any effort really to separate them because they sort of overlap. So, you know, pure disparate treatment is differences in treatment not explained by legitimate, non-discriminatory factors. Disparate impact being a neutral policy producing an adverse effect. Those two things are always kind of intertwined. You know, you can make all kinds of arguments, you know, to in cases, oh, this is disparate treatment, this is disparate impact. So which what I see anyway in the manuals, what they did was they just they took disparate treatment and they broadened it. Because it was more narrow before because you had disparate impact, you know, in sync. They broadened disparate treatment. Okay, this is what disparate treatment is. And then they narrowed disparate impact. So if you take a pure disparate impact case, you know, whether it be, you know, loan amount, minimum loan amount or whatever, you know, in the 30 years I've been doing this anyway, I mean, we've seen those type of things where a bank would have a factor in a underwriting model that had a discriminatory effect, but they couldn't really justify the business necessity. And the result was always, okay, we'll take it out. There never was an enforcement action, you know? So you never really saw disparate impact gone after, you know, from an enforcement perspective, but disparate treatment, you know, you did. And so I think that they've clarified those two things and they've made it distinct. But I think in the regulators' minds and especially the field examiners, I think everything they've been looking at all along is all under disparate treatment. You know, like your example, and again, not to get too far off in the weeds, but let's just take redlining. So let's just say that a bank has, you know, a group of counties that are in their assessment area. Say one county is a minority county, heavily minority. The others are, you know, kind of a mixed bag. So let's say their branch presences are in those two counties or one of those counties. So let's just say the bank has a policy that, you know, we don't market in this county. We don't spend a lot of money there because we don't have a location. We don't really have market share. And so our policy is we're going to, you know, just market to these areas. Well, obviously it's going to result in a discriminatory impact. Well, I mean, you could argue, hey, that's disparate impact all day long, but you know, it's disparate treatment. I mean, it's differences in treatment. And so I think that has been one of the confusers. I think the other piece is people associate disparate impact with statistics. And so, you know, what I've heard is people say, oh, well, if it involves statistics, then it's disparate impact and we don't have to worry about it. But that's completely, you know, couldn't be the furthest from the truth. I mean, you can't establish a pattern or practice of discrimination without data. You know, and it's always going to be some statistics involved in order to do that. And so, but again, I think you do have, a camp of people who want to, you know, people are kind of politics, I guess, you know, hearing what they want to hear and interpreting it that way. But yeah, I've heard the same thing that you said, that people have, you know, been very concerned about that. Oh, we're going to get in trouble the other way. So,
yeah. And so also in, are there any other areas of uncertainty in the regulatory environment, like areas in which, again, like I know we've touched on a few, any other areas of confusions, again, as to what the expectations are that you can expand on for us?
Yeah, the other big area that I think is on a lot of people's minds is special purpose credit products. And, you know, what's going to happen to those, and do those go away? And again, like what you were just saying, you know, the fear, okay, well, if we do this, because the redlining pressure has been so intense, banks have used special purpose credit products to, I mean, really compete with each other. You know, I think the regulators sometimes think there's just this huge untapped potential of lending out there, but you know, you have a finite market, right? And so everybody's kind of fighting over it. The same market. I mean, it's just general economics, you know. I mean, everybody's competing for these loans. And so, you know, one bank, they lower their price, they have this, you know, grant program or whatever. And so their performance starts to wane, or their performance improves at the expense of everybody else's. So then they respond, you know, they retaliate, you know, with another product. And I think that's, you know, kind of gone back and forth. So that's one of the things that I do think could change. I'm not really sure yet if it has changed. The banks that we deal with, it seems to me they're still have those products in place. I think they're a little more nervous about them now than they have been in the past. But that's an area I think that, you know, there's just tremendous uncertainty. So those will be my two, you know, the disparate impact, disparate treatment, changes in the manual and so forth. But then I guess the third one that sort of relates to both of those is that the changes really have been made to ECOA. And if you read the way that was written, I mean, they reinforce the fact that fair housing hasn't changed and is not going to change, and the same sort of rules apply. And so most of our analysis and most of what banks look at and what regulators look at is home to reportable lending. So that's the thing I think that's missed a lot of times, is that's the bulk of everything. And that hadn't changed a bit, you know, other than, you know, the priorities and regulatory priorities.
Absolutely. And so what are some things that you see coming in the next 3 to 5 years that you think are going to have the largest impact on banks, especially like just handling compliance generally, but also fair lending specifically?
Yeah. Well, the biggest thing, you know, is obviously the data. And so we go back, you know, as I said, you know, 20 years ago and, you know, the move to more statistical type approaches. And then with artificial intelligence, machine learning, that is really accelerated that, because machine learning, artificial intelligence are not possible without data. I mean, it's because we have this huge untapped potential of data and still do, that machine learning and artificial intelligence are able to do the things that they're able to do because you have the information. You take the information away, you have no large language model anymore without the data. So I think those two things coupled together, artificial intelligence, machine learning, and data, are going to be the biggest drivers. You know, the larger banks have always had data. You know, terrible data. I mean, it's stored, you know, like I remember, you know, even 10, 15 years ago, the examiners would come in and say, well, what do you have available electronically? Well, everything, right? I mean, it's all electronic, but it's stored. It's not really managed. So the banks don't really know what it, you know, they've gotten better, obviously, and have had to get better. But the smaller banks, everything's just image. They don't have data. So they've sort of been able to skirt a lot of that pressure. But we're at the point now where you can take all that stuff, dump it into a model, and come out with a database, you know, probably within minutes. And I think the smaller banks are not going to be able to run away from the need to have data, the need to manage their data, the need to know what that data says. And then the speed of which those things can be done. And I think that's the biggest challenge. And that's kind of where we are now sort of dealing with that, is if you're going to manage risk, you can't look a year backwards, you know. Okay, that happened last year. That's not telling me anything about what I want to know is what's going to happen this year, you know, or what's going to happen next quarter, really. Because if I know it's going to happen next quarter, you know, I want to catch it that quarter so I can fix it before it, you know, turns into a problem by the end of the year. So I think the speed of being able to manage that risk is only going to come through data. I think AI is going to accelerate that in a tremendous way. I think it's only a matter of time before the regulators begin to use machine learning models alongside, or maybe even in place of, conventional statistical regression analysis, you know, that's been done for all these years. And so I think banks really have to prepare for that. And I don't think they're prepared for that. And so they're going to really have to start making those changes. I think for the larger banks, it's just going to become critical. You know, I always say with fair lending, there is no cure. There's only prevention. Because once you have a problem, I mean, the cost, reputational risk, all those things, I mean, there's no, you're not curing that, you know. And so you've got to be able to prevent it. And I think in order to prevent it, they're going to have to be able to do things more quickly, do things, you know, I'm talking about like the banks that we work with, the larger banks, we're looking at data every month, sometimes twice a month. I mean, you've got to be able to stay ahead, because if you don't have the information, you don't know, you know, what to do. You want to know where you're headed. And so I think that forward-looking perspective and really risk management, because I'm going to say, you know, to me, and this is, again, opinion, and I will say unequivocally, I'm an expert when it comes to my own opinion, but a lot of banks can't really look their board in the eye and say, we're really managing the risk. I mean, we're monitoring the risk. We're not really managing the risk. And I think that's what banks are going to have to move to and gain the efficiency. I think at the same time, there's a lot of pressure from executive management to lower cost. You know, they see chat, they see Microsoft Copilot, they see Grok, they see all these models and the efficiencies you can gain by leveraging those. And I think they're going to be looking for, you know, efficiencies. And that's the only place it can come. You know, if you're still doing manual file reviews for everything and everything's still, you know, a manual labor intensive process, you're never going to get to where you need to be. So that's the biggest change, the biggest thing I think people have to be aware of and be prepared for. I don't think banks are prepared for that. But, you know, as you said, I mean, this ball is rolling downhill, and the longer it goes, the faster it's rolling. And so, yeah, you know, that's it. And so yeah, trying to stay ahead of that somehow is going to be
for
the key.
Sure. It's definitely going to be a perspective shift, especially for, like you said, that executive management and figuring mm-hmm. out how to come from behind the ball to get in front of it so that you can do that future looking for sure.
And one other piece I guess I'll add to that is, you know, while you've got to have the data, you've also it's contradictory, or it's a paradox in that you've got to have more data, but then you've got to have less data, because it doesn't do any good to give them a 300-page report and say, you know, sift through it and find out what matters. I mean, all the compliance people I know, I mean, you know, they're stressed out, they're overworked, they're shorthanded, they're always behind. It's just the nature of it. And so they don't need another 300-page report that they have to try to figure out what I need to go to committee with. And so there's a data, you know, compression part of that too, of, okay, let's take it, let's see what we have, let's sift through it, let me pull out what I really care about, and then be able to communicate that in a way. Because, you know, I mean, the boards and, you know, the regulators want board involvement. Their attention span is like this. I mean, they've got so many things, board meeting day, you know, it's funny, all my banks on board meeting, really board meeting week, you can't get in touch with them, you know, because everybody's scrambling, the agenda is just packed. And so you've got just a sliver of time to be able to get their attention. And so being able to take all that data, winnow through it and pull out what matters, I think is going to be a big, you know, a big requirement.
Absolutely. This is going to be such a great episode, I know, and so beneficial for our listeners. But here at Bank Matters, we also like to ask for one piece of advice that you would like to leave our listeners before we wrap up.
Sure. Absolutely. Well, you know, again, talking to risk managers, compliance managers, anybody who's managing risk, I think the one thing to always bear in mind is people do what you inspect, not so much what you expect. And so trust, but verify. And I know, you know, people work together and, hey, I don't want to ruffle anybody's feathers, but it is so important because, you know, in a fair lending review, what are the examiners looking at? Well, they're looking at lending, right? Well, most compliance people, they don't do lending. You know, they're monitoring what's being done, but what's being done is creating that data that is going to be in the end turn out to be what determines the outcome of that fair lending review. And so what's going into it and making sure that you're inspecting, have a little skepticism. You know, it's okay, have some healthy skepticism, because, you know, we've gotten into reviews where, you know, compliance people have been completely blindsided because they trusted, you know, what they were told and didn't really look into it. And those are the kind of hidden things that can really get you. And so I would say, you know, people do what you inspect. And so inspect, you know, like with my kids, you know, we never go upstairs to look at their rooms for a couple of months. I mean, gosh, you don't want to go up after that because it's going to be like a bomb went off, you know. But if we're, you know, you go up there, you're checking on them, you know, they keep it in line. So that would be my piece of advice.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Roberts. And for the rest of our listeners, that's Banking Matters.